Welcome to Conversations on Healthcare with Mark Maselli and Margaret Flinter. Mark is the founder, president, and CEO of Community Health Center Incorporated, a provider of primary healthcare services for the uninsured and underserved in 13 cities and 218 service locations in Connecticut. Margaret is senior vice president and clinical director of CHC and is a family nurse practitioner by profession. Conversations on Healthcare is a weekly look at the people and ideas that are transforming the delivery of healthcare in America. And this week, Mark and Margaret will be speaking with Jonathan Linkus from the American Telemedicine Association. In the Tech Report segment, Marianne O'Hare looks at some of the top healthcare apps for smartphones and tablets. And we begin with this week's bright idea.
Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives.
One of the directives of the Obama administration's Health Care Reform Act requires pediatricians and health insurers to begin screening kids for obesity, a condition afflicting 1 in 3 American children. The problem? What to do with those children who are identified as being overweight or obese? It's tough enough for adults to lose weight, even with multiple programs at their disposal. There are relatively few programs available to overweight children and their families that aren't expensive or hospital-based. UnitedHealthcare has teamed up with the YMCA to create a program for community-based weight loss sessions for kids and teens, launching the pilot program in Providence, Rhode Island. The kids, accompanied by a parent, join in a group session that are fun, but also informative. Kids are educated about the calorie counts of food, learn about body mass index, and the importance of exercise on a daily basis. At the end of the 16-week program, the overweight kids lost an average of 3.5% of their body fat. And the bonus? The parents and the rest of the family often lost weight too. The pilot program is inexpensive, kid-directed, and life-changing. And with follow-up as part of the program, these kids know they'll still be challenged to keep up with healthy lifestyle changes. Helping kids tackle obesity cheaply and in a community setting that works for kids and their families, now that's a bright idea. Today, Margaret and I are speaking with Jonathan Linkus, Chief Executive Officer of the American Telemedicine Association, the largest global nonprofit organization dedicated to fully integrating telemedicine into transformed healthcare systems to improve quality and affordability of healthcare throughout the world. Mr. Linkus, welcome to Conversations on Healthcare.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
John, you're a veteran in the field of telemedicine policy development. You launched the American Telemedicine Association back in 1993, way ahead of the technology curve. Now, with the explosion of technology applications, I imagine you're seeing applications in place that you could have only imagined 20 years ago. Tell us about telemedicine in the 21st century and how is it different from what you envisioned years ago?
It is certainly different. I said in 1993 that the implementation of telemedicine around the country is just around the corner, and it was a much bigger corner than I thought. But it is not only more widespread, but it is very different than we had anticipated back in 93. Telemedicine was largely a big video conferencing box, and people thought of it as something that a large hospital could use to see a patient in a rural area occasionally and use this high-fangled, high-cost technology called video conferencing. And now it's everything from handheld mobile devices to data streams to imaging and everything in between. It's becoming so ubiquitous. It's a great part of life these days.
John, the urgency of making healthcare better and making healthcare delivery more streamlined and more efficient is certainly front and center in the national debate these days. You recently wrote about the 7 biggest trends in telemedicine that we're likely to see in 2012, and I'd like to ask you if you could maybe focus on 2 of them. You could pick any 2, but the 2 I'd ask you to focus on, 1 that addressed cost, the shift away from fee-for-service reimbursement as a trend, and the 2nd, telemedicine actually becoming the standard of care in some clinical areas. Tell us about these trends, and how soon do you think they go from trend to accepted normal practice?
Well, you know, the traditional way we all get paid, of course, is fee-for-service. In terms of physicians or other health providers, they submit a bill to the insurance company, have a little code on it, it's called a CPT code or a couple of different types of codes, and they get paid according to that service. And the problem with that system and the fee-for-service system is the more times you see the doctor, the more he's going to get paid. There's a lot of incentive for doctors to see their patients more and more often and do a lot of other types of activities that all generate revenue. this subtle shift away from fee-for-service to managed care or capitated care or other types of medical homes, different ways of calling it, but a different way of paying for it. You're paying for the health of the person rather than for the service delivered each time. It's a radical change, probably more of a change in our healthcare system than anything else that's going on, because it changes the perspective. You're no longer eager to see a patient come in to provide a service to them, to bill for it. You're eager to have your patient get well. And the other thing that part of that is it allows the physician, the healthcare provider, the health system to make decisions on their own. They're no longer following just the rules that are handed down to them by the provider, by the Medicare system, by the state. They're on their own in some ways to figure out the best way to provide care for that patient, to make sure the patient is well and gets better as they're supposed to do. And that means for telemedicine, we're shifting away from having to fight these battles with the folks in terms of, is this an allowable cost? Is this an appropriate technology?
Mm-hmm.
It's now to the providers who really should be making the decision, and it opens up where telemedicine is going. It just plays to the strength of using telemedicine.
Let me pull the thread a little on that. You see telemedicine providing an opportunity for tremendous new growth on the business side of healthcare, and one of those areas will be the rise of the independent remote clinical enterprises. It's already being done successfully in certain disciplines like teleradiology, and patient scans and x-rays are being analyzed by clinicians in other locations. What are some of the other promising growth areas that will not only provide better patient service through telemedicine, but offer new business models for healthcare industry as well?
A couple of examples, stroke care. There are so many emergency medical rooms that are in existence around the country that don't have a trained neurologist on staff. And when you come in, when someone comes in with a stroke, it's really important to identify what type of stroke it is and identify what is the appropriate action to take, whether it's administering a drug or other types of medications. You need a neurologist to make those assessments. And if you don't have one on staff, you're up to the guess of someone who is maybe a very competent physician, but not one who is trained in neurology. The work of telemedicine and telestroke care or teleneurology allows all of the emergency rooms to have access to a shared neurologist who can see the patient at the time they come in. This has been around for about 5 or 10 years. There are hundreds of stories of people whose life have been changed, lives have been saved, because they've had a very simple activity in the emergency room where they can hook them up to a neurologist. The same type of thing is being done with intensive care units. Hospitals around the country now, their ICUs are being looked at by an intensivist, someone who is trained in the study of taking care of patients who are in the ICU. Studies by several major groups, including LeapFrog, which is a national group of employer healthcare providers, and others have said that if you use intensivists, the outcomes for patients in the intensive care unit is dramatically changed. Their chances of survival, their chances of a good outcome are dramatically better, but not every hospital can afford an intensivist, or not everyone can afford an intensivist 24/7. And so, not surprisingly, a lot of hospitals, even all the major hospitals in the country, are now moving to share intensivists among a number of facilities so that you'll have one physician who's looking at patients who are in an intensive care unit, maybe in 4 or 5 different hospitals or facilities around the region. All of these, sharing specialists is not only cost efficient, but it makes a real difference in patients' lives, and that's what we're really talking about with telemedicine.
You know, John, when we interview folks like yourself that really have their finger on the pulse of these innovations, I'm often struck by what a gap there seems to be between sort of the general public's awareness of what's going on with these innovations and the tremendous progress that's being made. And another area, certainly the remote monitoring of ICU is one of them, but another area is the increasing emergence of robotics as part of medicine and as part of telemedicine. So where robotic surgery has become pretty commonplace in hospitals, we're also seeing some success using robotics in other areas as part of telemedicine, particularly in people's homes, both post-hospitalization and other areas where monitoring is needed. Where do you see robotics fitting into telemedicine beyond the operating room, and how deep is the research on their effectiveness in achieving the kinds of outcomes we'd like to see?
I think in the next 5 to 10 years, I think we will see a dramatic change in that area, and people's lives will be changed as a result of that as well. When I first started in telemedicine, this idea of robotic surgery was just being experimented with, and in the speeches I would give, I would say, well, sometime in our lifetime, maybe we'll have some of this actually deployed in some hospitals. Mm-hmm. Well, as you know, hundreds and hundreds of hospitals around the country are using robotic surgery all the time. Now there are robots where a physician can do grand rounds, can see patients in multiple places, even though he is at home or she is at home or in some other location. They use a portable robot that moves down the hall and has their picture in the frame, and they're seeing a patient at a bedside, then they turn and go to the next bedside. We're seeing robots that are used in ambulances to provide instant care to people on their way to the hospital. There's a number of different applications that are emerging. Surprising to me, most of them out of the box have been pretty cost effective. It's a type of technology that's still new, still being developed. Some of the robot companies that are working on things like cleaning your rug, there's a company that does that with a little robot. Some of them are being used in the healthcare field as well now. So we're seeing a lot of integration among different types of robotics. And I think you're right. I think that's going to be moving into the home in a much bigger way in the next couple of years. We already have remote vital sign monitoring in the home that's becoming pretty standard in a lot of cases, particularly with people with chronic care. Mm-hmm. So I think it's only a matter of time that we're going to have other types of robotics that'll move quickly into every place we're located.
Today we're speaking with Jonathan Linkus, CEO of the American Telemedicine Association. The mission is to promote professional, ethical, and equitable improvement in healthcare delivery through telecommunications and information technology. Jonathan, the ATA is advising Congress, the administration, and numerous organizations domestically and globally on policies that will promote the integration of telemedicine into healthcare systems. In fact, you predict the advances being made in telemedicine technologies are going to make healthcare a globally integrated business. What does globalization mean for a typical practice or a patient here at home?
I think the globalization is already here in many ways. For example, in radiology, almost every hospital in the United States now uses teleradiology in some sort. Maybe the radiologist at home, maybe some other place. And increasingly, the radiologist doesn't have to be located not in a hospital, not necessarily in the same community, not even in this country. If you're in a hospital in Billings, Montana, in the middle of the night, and you have a broken leg, and you have an X-ray being done, and it's 3 in the morning, and you don't have a radiologist there, a group of radiologists in Sydney, Australia, will do the read.
I should note on that they still need the state license. That state license is still trumping globalization.
Absolutely. Every physician that's involved in this, providing care to patients in the United States, must be fully licensed, and if they're in a hospital, credentialed and privileged in that hospital. And so that's beyond a doubt. But the United States is not only receiving care from physicians outside, we're providing care to other countries. This has been going on for a long time. In the Middle East, there are several companies that are providing not only the radiology services, but a variety of medical services to people there, and that's going to expand as we see more and more. Typically, the United States has been the source of providing medical services to people around the globe who have come here, traveled here to provide, to get medical services. But now we're being able to export our expertise around the world. Obviously, other countries could provide here as well.
John, you've, I'm sure, seen literally thousands of tech gadgets and applications come and go in your years. And
many.
I really like the term the gold rush that you refer to of the 21st century with all the products
right.
that are being rushed into development. And you also, you know, make the seasoned comment that a lot of them won't make it into the mainstream healthcare marketplace. But just sort of thinking broadly, what will characterize the winners in this rush of development and creativity that we're seeing? And any thoughts on the role of federal investment and federal regulations in determining which wins and persist into the future?
Well, I think for many parts of telemedicine, we're still at the top of the hype cycle. And if you're familiar with that, the next step is the trough of disillusionment. And unfortunately, we're going to be there with some of these. And there's going to be some products that seem wonderful but will fall off the landscape. Largely, you have the innovators in telemedicine include a variety of technology firms and experts and various types of telecommunications or technologies, but you've got to be aware of the healthcare market. You know, healthcare payment systems, as you well know, are very different from buying something at a retail store. And the way it's paid for, who pays for it, the regulations behind it are very different, and you have to be very aware of that. So I think the products and the services that are aware of the way the healthcare is provided and can seamlessly integrate themselves into the delivery of care are the ones that are going to make it. The role of the government is in a variety of areas, from regulation of devices through the Food and Drug Administration to payment of services through Medicare, And just the general consensus of where we're going in terms of healthcare and medicine, even the state medical boards and the various activities that are functioning in terms of the Federal Trade Commission, all of these are going to be playing a role in terms of shaping the healthcare delivery system of the future.
You know, another area that's going to shape the growth of all this technology, and there's a real explosion out there, but it seems to be one of the Achilles heel might be around intellectual property and patents for certain tech applications that could ostensibly make developers a lot of money. There's nothing wrong with that, but how do we balance the rights of the inventors with the underlying goals of promoting science and better health for the general population?
Well, you put your finger on something that's an emerging issue and concern in telemedicine. There's been a variety of folks out there who have decided they would get a patent on something as very fundamental as seeing a patient on a video conference. Of course, it's been around for a long time. It's not different from a lot of emerging industries where we have this. And we're going through that period of figuring out the intellectual property and who owns it and what makes sense to move for the industry. We're hoping that the government plays an active role in helping us search through this pathway to get to the right place. But yes, we do have that concern right now because there are people who've got great inventions and they need to be protected. On the other hand, there's a lot of telemedicine that is growing and we need to have the innovation continue without being fettered with someone getting a patent that's a global patent and trying to enforce it by really just cherry picking off of the market that's out there now.
John, I'm a big fan of telemedicine as a great strategy to eliminate waste and waits and delays and connecting patients, especially patients seen in primary care with specialists and other services. But I have to tell you, those barriers are pretty formidable. Mark referenced the issue of a state like the one that we are based in that requires that the provider making a diagnosis radiologically hold a license to practice in the state. But another one is just the variation between the states in whether Medicaid in particular, which makes up its mind on a state-to-state basis about the services it will cover, is going to cover telemedicine. So you've got an enormous challenge in front of you, I would think, in terms of bringing some standardization. And while each state is its own both laboratory for innovation and its own set of laws and regulations, what are you doing as an organization to try and get some consistency across the state so you can really make telemedicine efficient? I was interested in your story about the virtual care center that's going to span four states. Well, presumably those four states have a lot in common with each other. So maybe you could just comment on what you're working on nationally to get some sure. systemization there.
Well, you know, diseases don't pay attention to state boundaries.
Right.
And actually the practice of medicine doesn't really pay attention to state boundaries. Every physician is granted an MD using the exact same test around the country. Medical specialties on a national basis is what certify specialists. States have been a very important part of breeding the innovation and helping to protect patient safety. But as we move ahead and the practice of medicine becomes more than just a local community-based practice, but more of a regional practice, we do have to change the way we view things. There has to be a lot more interaction among medical institutions, physicians, and patients, no matter where they're located. If you're in upstate New York, why can't you see a specialist who happens to be in Atlanta if that's the best way of getting you care and also the more efficient way? Why would you have to hop on a plane to go down and see them if you can get the care there? So all of these things are a big challenge. You're right. We're working with Congress to look at legislation. We're working with the states to try to look at various ways of providing reciprocity. Certainly there are differences in the way not only physicians and other healthcare providers are licensed, but also how you view the practice of medicine. You're absolutely right. Some states have to require that the physician has to see the patient before they prescribe anything. Other states will allow that to go on if you're seeing them virtually. I think there's a lot of education that needs to be done in terms of what is available now. I think a lot of the state regulators need to listen to their kids. Like what they're doing.
Always a good strategy.
There's just so much available now. And it's a big fight, but I'm very confident because, as I've said a lot to a lot of folks, time's on our side.
Speaking about listening to our kids, certainly you'd have to be thinking about mobile health and smartphones. And talk to us a little bit about the difference between mHealth and telemedicine. Certainly telemedicine is a one-to-one relationship between the patient and the doc, and mHealth seems to be one-to-many. But how would you describe it, and what are you doing as you move into that new arena?
Well, mHealth is the latest craze in what I consider just really a component of telemedicine, because it really is just telemedicine is just providing health care remotely using telecommunications. And if it's a handheld device or if it's a wired device to your desktop, it doesn't really matter. Now, mHealth is allowing things, types of services that we couldn't provide before, but it's all part of the continuum of providing remote health care. So it's a great new way of allowing people to have access to health information, to have access to their physicians, to send in vital signs, not just home-based, but work-based, when you're on the subway-based, anywhere you happen to be. It's a tremendous freeing thing for the consumer, for the patient. But the real challenge for mHealth, as for other technologies, is to fit into the healthcare system. There's a lot of misperceptions among mHealth that it can be a consumer device that works almost outside of what you're doing when you see the doctor or going outside of the hospital. And certainly it frees people, it frees the consumer, empowers the consumer in many ways, but you still have to somehow figure out how this fits into the overall system of getting health care. So that's a challenge of it. But it certainly is interrelated, and so many applications that we see have been in telemedicine for 20, 30 years are now just using handheld devices as another way of providing the care.
John, we like to ask all of our guests this one final question. When you look around the country and the world, what do you see in terms of innovation, and who should our listeners at Conversations be keeping an eye on?
Wow, I think there is so much innovation going on in so many different places. It's hard to put a finger on any one. Certainly, the academic medical centers here are all experimenting with different approaches, but I think we're seeing in the Silicon Valley area and some of the technology companies that have led the way in the telecommunications world and consumer health are starting to get into this area as well. And so I think we're going to see applications that come out of very, very different places, retail consumers, retail outlets. I think we're going to see entertainment industry get involved in the healthcare world. I think there's a lot of different ways that surprise me every day in terms of where to turn for the next innovation.
Today, we've been speaking with Jonathan Linkus, CEO of the American Telemedicine Association. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
I'm Marianne O'Hare with this tech report. There is a veritable explosion of apps for iPads, Droids, and iPhones out there. But a few made the top 10 list for 2011. Apps for monitoring fitness on the go, like iMuscle, that allows you to zoom into a 3D scan of the body's muscles to pinpoint exact muscle groups to work at the gym. Another app called Fitness Class also ranked in the top 10. No chance to get to the gym? No problem. You've got a tough trainer right there in your pocket. Or how about expectant mothers having a week-by-week 3D image of fetal development at their fingertips? And on the medical side, Airstrip Cardiology, which allows patients' electrocardiogram history to be easily shared and viewed. It's a critical tool in emergency cardiac situations. No need to snuggle up with your dog-eared copy of Grey's Anatomy anymore. I'm Marianne O'Hare with this tech report.
If you have questions for Mark Maselli and Margaret Flinter, or would like to subscribe to the Conversations podcast, you can visit them on the web at chc1.com. The Health Forum is part of Connecting Our Communities from Connecticut Public Broadcasting in partnership with area nonprofits, and production support for Conversations on Healthcare has been provided in part by Community Health Center Incorporated. You're listening to WNPR, Connecticut's public radio station.